Hello everyone, welcome back to Chibi and Chill, the anime podcast. I'm your host Ryan, and if you're a fan of anime, manga, gaming, collectibles, all that good stuff, you're in the right place, and there are new episodes every single week, so make sure you do hit that subscribe button, make sure you subscribe, it's free and quick to do, and make sure you don't miss a weekly episode of brand new content every single week. So in this episode, it's going to be about one of the most shocking films from the Studio Ghibli, like, catalogue of films that I think I've ever watched, and it's become a favourite of mine because of that. Every single week, if you're new to the show, I do a bucket list update, and it's a bucket list that's behind me if you're watching on YouTube, and it's kind of, I watch a series or a film that's on that poster to try and tick off 100 anime on the poster and kind of finish like a big bucket list. So let's do a tiny update very quickly. I'm not even going to change the lights for this one. We'll run straight through into the actual episode. So this week, I watched a little bit more One Piece. I've actually got some news from One Piece. It's going to be on animation hiatus for 6 months. So actually, you've got a load of time. If you're like me, maybe you're not caught up. Right now, I'm in Wano. So I'm not too far off. I think I'm about 100 episodes away from catching up to the Egghead arc. So if you're like me, you've got plenty of time now to catch up for the new carry on of the season. So we've got a break, we've got a chance, we've got the one time this is probably going to ever happen to actually catch up. So I kind of need to work out what kind of time does 100 episodes work out in 6 months, like how many do I need to watch a day kind of thing. So I need to kind of work that out, but that's great. So I'm quite excited for that. I'm quite excited when an anime kind of chooses to take a break and work on pacing, work on animation. I think it's great. I think it means that they're dedicated to quality, which I'm really, really happy with. I've also been watching Welcome to Demon School, Irumakun. It's one of my favourite like Halloween-y vibe, true Halloween vibe anime. And I mentioned that in the last week's episode, so do check that out if you've not already checked that out. But this week, I watched Grave of the Fireflies, which is the focus of today's episode. And I'm going to dive into why it struck me, what it's about, whether you should watch it or not, and why it's so different to every other Studio Ghibli film. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already, and let's dive into the basics of Grave of the Fireflies. So to make sure I get everything right, I've got an iPad here, so if I'm looking down like this, that's probably why I'm looking down, and just make sure I don't get everything wrong for you guys. So the film Grave of the Fireflies is actually based off of a book of the same name, and it's a film that was made in 1988, and it was just after My Neighbor Totoro. So Studio Ghibli released this film just after the big success of My Neighbor Totoro, and it became iconic. That film was like a modern classic at the time, and now it's definitely a classic nowadays. And this film saw the same release that same year, so that's super interesting to release such a different film straight after that one. So it's kind of an interesting marketing tactic, I guess. But the semi-autobiographical short story of the same name, Grave of the Fireflies, is what kind of inspired this story. So I didn't actually know it was semi-autobiographical when I watched it, and it's super interesting, and it kind of makes it hit home more that it is semi-autobiographical. So it's interesting. We'll dive into why it's so hard hit in a few moments. Japanese name is Hotaru Nohaka, and it's a 1988 Japanese animated historical war film written and directed by Isao Takahata and produced by Studio Ghibli. And it's based on the 1967 book of the short story same name by Akiyuki Nosaka. Apologies if I do butcher any of these Japanese names. Trying my best. It's so hard to say them out loud. But the film is all about, without giving too much away, I really don't want to put in too many spoilers, but there will be some spoilers in this because I watched this and I could not stop thinking about this film. There's so much to unpack with it. It's so deep and meaningful and sad and dramatic at the same time. There's so much going on. And it's, when we think of Studio Ghibli, we think of Kiki's Delivery Service, Spirited Away, we think of My Neighbor Totoro, we think of Howl's Moving Castle, one of my favourite ones. There's so many, and a lot of them are a lot calmer, they're a lot softer films, they're a lot more kind of mystical and fun and playful. And this one is completely removed from that. It's completely different. And I was really pleasantly surprised in a way. I love a Studio Ghibli film, that's no secret of mine. But I absolutely loved that this one took a completely different turn. Nice to have one that is so completely removed from the rest of the kind of vibe of Studio Ghibli. It's really, really shocking to kind of watch. So please bear with there are spoilers from this point on, from right now.
Hello everyone, I just thought I'd pop in here real quick just to tell you all about Crunchyroll. And Crunchyroll is my favourite platform to stream all the anime that I watch, including Naruto, One Piece, Attack on Titan, Black Clover, and a whole host more, all of which I'm probably talking about in this episode. Down in the show notes and in the description, you'll find a link to start a free trial where you'll be able to browse a whole host of thousands of anime that you'll want you to discover and love.
So the plot is all about, in March 1945, American Boeing 29 Super Fortress bombers destroy most of Kobe in Japan during the close of the Pacific War. So military children of an Imperial Japanese Navy captain, Saita, and his sister Setsuko survive, but their mother is severely injured, unfortunately, and later does unalive. Saita conceals their mother's death from Setsuko to keep her happy and kind of keep that trauma from taking over, I guess. It's a lot to unpack for him and for Setsuko as well. He doesn't want to hurt his sister. He kind of wants to kind of keep things moving as normal as he can for her. And that is so, that's a very common theme through the film. It's very, very plain to see. And it's so, so interesting and kind of heart-wrenching to kind of see as well, to kind of see what that experience would have been. The siblings end up moving in with a family aunt, and things kind of turn, and it starts off super pleasant, and then all of a sudden there's a lot of change. There's a lot of kind of betrayal, I guess, and it's interesting to see how different people and different characters kind of deal with what's going on around them. And the film kind of focuses on a lot on that, on how war itself is a terrible thing anyway, but then it shows this side effect of war that we don't really see all too much when we think about of war. We think of the actual fight in itself, what's going on in the front line. This film really showcases what people in Japan of the Pacific War really went through from a civilian point of view. So how did they get on? How did they kind of survive? What did they have to do? What happened to some people because of the war, and how it kind of destroyed areas of like civilization there? A lot of the buildings were like wood and things like that, so they just went up in flames straight away. They didn't really have a chance with their buildings. They were old buildings, so they've been there for centuries or hundreds of years, you know, that kind of thing. So it shows you that kind of destruction, and then this flow of like displaced people, and where do they go? It's really, really interesting. They kind of move in with an aunt, and Saita retrieves supplies that were their mother's, and you know, these end up getting divvied out and sold to get their own food. They have to sell their own mother's things that they're not really even processed yet, process that kind of loss, and they have to sell them to get food, to get rice, to get the basic necessities, being able to just survive. But a lot of things quickly happen that I don't want to give too much away. I am really conscious there's so much to unpack, but I don't want to give you too many spoilers. But there's a lot of a theme around the struggle with food, the struggle with housing, the struggle with the people around them. People around them are also struggling, and they're wanting to help one another, but they have to look after themselves as well. I think that shows a really tough storyline of how people struggle with helping themselves, and seeing these kids kind of come for help as well, and they're trying their best to try and help. And there's one character that really does help them. And he's amazing, and you know, they kind of set their own kind of thing going up, living next to a lake, and it's a gorgeous little area, but they're in a gorgeous place for a bad reason. And that's why I think it's these kind of moments where we see how anime can completely change how a story is portrayed, or portrayed in a way that the author itself wanted. In the development kind of notes here, it kind of says that the author of the original short story was approached multiple times about doing like a live action version of the book, which when you think about it, that would be an amazing film. That would be so, so heart-wrenching, and that would be amazing. But the author of the original short story kind of said to these production companies that nothing will ever be able to do it justice properly if we did a live action. The characters wouldn't be right, the modern children wouldn't be right, the kind of how they could do the buildings wouldn't be quite right. I find that really interesting. Even with all the budget under the sun that could be put with it, it wouldn't work, and he didn't think his actual vision would be portrayed how he kind of wanted it. And I, you know, mad respect for that. I think that's really interesting that Yes, it could have been a really lucrative deal, but he stood by what his art wanted to be and what his book was. It's semi-autobiographical, so I guess there is a very much emotional attachment to that as well. So, he wanted to have it portrayed exactly right and how he kind of wanted it. And when Studio Ghibli wanted to do an animated film version of it, he, because of how they could do it and how they could kind of portray the environment, the kids, and the kind of emotions in the film through animation, then he was more than happy to do it. And I think that's really interesting to show how anime is more than a cartoon. It's a tool to completely transform stories and portray not only nice magical girl stuff like Sailor Moon and Yu-Gi-Oh, all that kind of thing. It's actually a tool to showcase really deep stories in different ways. But there's moments in the film that kind of make you think, okay, wow, like I didn't expect to see that from a Studio Ghibli film. There are moments where you see their mother and she's covered in the bandages and there's bugs all on her because she's starting to decompose. There's all these kind of moments where you kind of think, whoa, I did not expect to see that from a Studio Ghibli film. And it's kind of shocking and it's so interesting, but the anime kind of really works to portray a different timeline at the same time as the one that we're kind of looking back on. It's kind of like the main character is taking us through the journey of what they experienced, and there's these moments of reflection. And I don't want to spoil it too much, it's really hard. But there are these moments of reflection with where the two of them are looking back at what they experienced. There's only about three or four of these moments in the entire film, but those three or four moments are so touching to see this kind of reflective moment and kind of like break the fourth wall a little bit, which is really, really interesting to kind of see. But oh my god, it's amazing. There are themes in this film. So there is a disclaimer, I guess. There is a theme of war, obviously. But there are themes of like suffering. There are themes of like malnutrition. There are themes of death. So there are a lot of very, very mature themes, and these are themes that I think a lot of the Studio Ghibli films do have that kind of war theme. There's quite a lot of the films have that war theme, and this one has the most dark theme, which is why I kind of wanted to do it during spooky season, because it's kind of like the darkest one. They went full out with showing the darkness of war in this, and it's really, really interesting. It's not just a flying plane that we see. We see the plane, but we also see what happens below it directly there and then, and we see what's going on with the people that have been injured. We see the bodies on the streets. We see the animation of that. We see the animation of people unaliving there and then. It is so dark. And it was so shocking to kind of watch from knowing that it's Studio Ghibli. You see the bright blue Totoro kind of logo come up for Studio Ghibli, and then all of a sudden we're met with this boy that's suffering in like a rail station. It's really, really bizarre and kind of shocking to kind of see. It's really, really weird, but an amazing film, I have to say. It is one of the best Studio Ghibli films I've ever watched because of I think partly because, yes, the animation is amazing. The film itself is amazing, but also I kind of think it hits home more knowing the fact that it's semi-autobiographical. So it is part of the story is this guy's, the author's family life. This is part of his story, which I think is really interesting. Like, wow, it hits home even more. I've not read the book, but I think it does hit home much, much harder knowing that it's part of this guy's history, and part of his family's story. So the film is Grave of the Fireflies. I watched it on Netflix. There's I struggled to find it for a long, long time, but this has been on my watch list for a very long time. I'm kind of working my way through, yes, the bucket list, but also just working my way through the Studio Ghibli films. I think I've only got a handful left to watch, and then I've watched them all. But this has been one of my favourite ones, I think, because it's so different, and I love Spirited Away. I love Howl's Moving Castle. Those two are like my like favourite ones, along with Kiki's Delivery Service. But I think this one is so different that I can't not have it up there. If you are wanting a more adult animation film, oh, that sounds wrong. If you're wanting a darker animation film from Studio Ghibli to watch this spooky season, this is definitely one to watch. It's not, I know it doesn't quite fit the theme of like spooky or Halloweeny, but it's dark, and I really wanted to kind of, I needed to talk about this episode. I needed to talk about this film. I couldn't leave this film not talked about, if I'm absolutely honest. But I do have some quick, like, trivia facts for you for the kind of last little portion of this episode. So the film was modestly successful at the Japanese box office, apparently, where it grossed 1.7 billion yen. So very, very well. And as part of the Studio Ghibli Film Fest 2018, the film had a limited theatrical release in the United States, grossing nearly $517,000, which is great. I don't know how well they usually do, but that sounds good to me. That sounds good. There is an Easter egg as well. I'll put it up on the screen here. But there is an Easter egg that in the like main poster for the film, they're in the boy and the girl are in the like fields with the fireflies, and you'll notice that the dots are slightly different. There are different shapes, and if you like raise the brightness of the poster, there's actually a hidden bomber plane in the background, and that's why some of the drops are different. Some of them are bombs, and some of them are fireflies, which gives a whole new meaning to that poster. At first glance, it's kind of just a lovely poster of kids with fireflies, which is really cute and nice and wholesome. And then you kind of realise what the drops are, why they're different, and then you realise it's a plane in the background. I think that kind of moment on its own, the fact that they built that into the poster is really, really interesting. But then also at the same time, that kind of fits the whole narrative of this film of seeing things that aren't there and kind of the darkness that sits behind, I guess, is a good kind of narrative of how the destruction that sits behind the war, the kind of civilian side, normal life side that gets impacted, is a great kind of metaphor for that kind of poster. But yeah, this has been an awesome film. Do check this out. I don't know how to wrap up this episode, if I'm honest. I'm still kind of thinking about the film, and since there's anything else I can mention to you guys before I close up, but I really don't think there is. I think you need to watch it and kind of experience the film, because it's so, so interesting. It didn't make me cry. It's not that level of sad, but it is sobering, I guess. It's dark and sad and touching and moving. And yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. It is a great film. Do check this out. It's on Netflix right now. I would suggest getting on there, watching it before it gets removed. I don't know how long the kind of license is there for, so do check that out before it goes. Thank you so much for chilling with me today. Enjoy all the anime you'll end up watching. Remember to subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're watching this on, or on if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel. All links to Etsy shop, Crunchyroll free trial, all that good stuff is down in the description. Enjoy, and enjoy the rest of your weeks, guys. Bye-bye.